You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, you beautiful people. Now that you're here, we can get the party started. It's always hard to give you a preview of where this is going to go, because although I have a plan, I've got notes in front of me. Once I start yapping, there's really no telling where this is going to go. The problem is everything reminds me of something. And I have to quickly decide, is this a story worth telling? And as you probably have noticed, I'm not always right, meaning I might tell a story that's not worth telling. But hey, if it's not, stay for the intro and outro music. At least that goes hard, right? Hard like two chickens at the same time. Synchronized swimmers. What I plan to talk about is O.J. Simpson, a masterclass on negotiations. I'll talk about Black Swans, Black Swan events. I'll share the AI tool I've been using most. I'll talk about trendsetters and real estate. But first, anybody watch that SNL 50th anniversary special? They played clips of skits that didn't age well, according to them. And that was, in my opinion, the best part, because it made you long for the days when SNL was funny. And I realize I'm being that guy, the older guy who thinks that new music isn't as good as old music. But they played all the skits from back when we could all make fun of each other. They were doing comedy. And then wokeness came along and killed comedy. Every skit became racial and unfunny. My theory is, if you think John Mulaney and Seth Meyers are feminine theater kids, just think about the following generation. I mean, it's just gotten worse since, right? Like, masculinity is it was becoming extinct. Now, of course, it's coming back, but did you see the skit called Black Jeopardy with Tom Hanks representing a Trump voter? He was wearing a MAGA hat and afraid to shake the black guy's hand. That kind of skit should retire Lorne Michaels. Like, you have lost it, old man. Your shit is not funny. And I never believed the stuff about Tom Hanks being a pedophile. But if he's not, I mean, how do you agree to do that crap if you're not compromised? I'm not accusing him of diddling kids. I've seen no evidence of that. But talk about losing the respect of most men as you begin to fade in your career. How can that be worth it? Forrest freaking chump. 60 Minutes of Propaganda is at it again. This time, there were two items that stood out. One, they brought in Samantha Powers' former speechwriter and tried to claim she was your average everyday employee at USAID and would be out of a job and struggle to pay her bills and all that, somehow neglecting to mention that she'd be getting 8 months severance. Have you ever known somebody to get 8 months severance? I haven't. But the more odious one, I believe, was when they interviewed prosecutors in Germany following our VP's speech over there. The American actress, by the way, those who are unable to identify propaganda, those are the same people who believe actors' opinions, like political opinions, are smart. They believe what Hulk Hogan used to do in the ring was real. Or maybe even better, they believe that Jerry Springer episodes, like all those fights, were real. Those are the same people. They're dupes. The same way you could watch 100 consecutive episodes where there's a fight on Jerry Springer and not think, wait a minute, this is obviously fake. Those same folks watch Margaret Brennan or Caitlin Collins, and they don't know that they're well-paid actresses. If you need help, I know you don't. I realize I don't have a lot of listeners who don't know what propaganda looks like, but if you someday find yourself a truth seeker, you ones who can identify propaganda, go back and watch clips from when Caitlin Collins was a contributor at Fox News. She was more feminine back then, of course. I don't know that there are any feminine propagandists, but she had the opposite opinions to what she has now. And even that thing she does with her lips, that's all fake too. she didn't used to have that. She makes $3 million a year. If you don't think that would motivate a woman's androgyny, if needed, and her opinions, you're living in a fake reality. And I guess you'll remain comfortably smug, I guess. But what I was going to say on the German prosecutors was when the 60 Minutes propagandist said with a straight face, which is, of course, the sign of a good actress, somebody who can control their facial movements when they're full of it. She asked about online violence, and nobody batted an eye. Hey, Toots, describe for me what online violence is. Well, the Germans said that it was a crime to call somebody a name online. They don't have free speech in Europe. And that's why my European guests on the podcast have refused to give their real name. A lot of people don't realize that. My best German friend asked that I not use his name, and he doesn't even use his real name on Facebook. Now you know why. I might even be tempted, if I were Trump, to back out of NATO until they get rid of their thought police. Because remember, they're jailing people for their words because they haven't yet figured out how to jail them for their thoughts. The words are a shortcut. And I don't know how closely we should be partnering with countries that are not democracies. Because, of course, free speech is the hallmark of democracy, which is why we witnessed the censoring of free speech during the attempted overthrow of our own democracy. On a lighter note, let's talk real estate. So I've been seeing a lot of talk about abolishing real estate taxes and income taxes, but I'm going to focus on the real estate side. Whenever I see tax talk, I'm always conscious of the fact that, one, people don't like to talk about taxes, but and it's kind of boring. It's a boring topic. I'll try to spice it up if I can. But two, that tax laws can change. Just as an example, I've heard my entire adult life why you should be investing in a Roth IRA, and you probably should. And the reason is because you can make contributions with after-tax money, and your investments will grow tax-free. And then your qualified withdrawals are also tax-free. And maybe this is a good time for a disclaimer. This is not tax or investment advice. If you're taking investment or tax advice from some podcaster, you are doing it wrong, just so we're clear. But like me, you've probably heard about the benefits of a Roth your entire adult life. There are no taxes on the growth. They don't have RMDs or required minimum distributions, unlike a traditional Roth or a traditional IRA. The main reason for taking advantage of a Roth is it's a hedge against potential tax hikes, since you've already paid the taxes on that money. But anytime you make an investment, you're dealing in probabilities and what the expected return on your money might be. And in all likelihood, you'll never have to pay taxes on the money that you take out of your Roth one day. But read Nassim Taleb's Incerto, and you will quickly realize how fast things can change. I'm thinking specifically of his first book, Fooled by Randomness, and The Black Swan. A black swan event is when something happens that nobody predicted, and it changes everything. I mean, there may have been some nomad off the coast of Australia who spotted a black swan a long time ago and didn't tell the rest of us, but just in this century, we've experienced a bunch of black swan events. They happen way more than we realize. Examples would be 9/11, the Great Recession in 08-09, COVID, probably electing a man to president who's never been in politics twice. Those are events we didn't anticipate that had significant impact on us, which many people try to rationalize after the fact or even convince themselves that they knew it was coming. But who anticipated America falling to communism or flirting with it? I have clueless awfuls in my news feed, the few who haven't defriended me, who have no idea how close we came to totalitarianism in America. But that's okay. We'll still do the masculine thing and look out for your best interests. Because unfortunately, awfuls wouldn't know what's good for them, you know, from a long-term perspective if their cat whispered it in their ear. Now, what I'm getting at is it's very possible in my lifetime, the elimination of real estate taxes, it becomes a thing. just as it's possible that Canada becomes our 51st state. Who would have thought that that would even be discussed? That's not something I would put my money on. You know, I wouldn't put my money on what my mouth is saying now, but remember when we were kids blowing dandelions, you remember you grab a dandelion and blow it and make a wish. And a lot of kids would wish for peace in the Middle East. That was a popular thing. Well, thank you, Jared Kushner, who was another genius of our time. With the Abraham Accords. I can't wait to hear Barron speak, because I've got a feeling like Kushner, he'll finally speak on some podcast as Kushner did on Lex Fridman and show us how these genius types are able to say less than necessary. But once they finally do speak, it turns into podcast gold. If you haven't heard Kushner talk about the Abraham Accords, do yourself a favor. There's a reason the Saudi crown prince invested $2 billion with Kushner's private equity firm. And if real estate taxes are eliminated, you know, you might just find me upgrading my vehicle. No, probably not. I need to share the story of my recent car purchase. But who would be a bigger fan of eliminating real estate taxes than our real estate mogul president? Am I right? The problem is, historically, when the government decides to eliminate a tax, they generally find another way to get you. But maybe not this government. I don't know, because they seem to be hell-bent on cutting taxes and enriching us as much as possible. So we'll see. But with regard to IRAs, under a communist takeover, let's say, I mean, who's to say they wouldn't tax Roth IRAs or confiscate them entirely to redistribute them to underprivileged migrants? You know, who knows? Who would have thought they would reallocate FEMA money to migrants and put them up in luxury hotels? If you don't think humans are capable of such fairness, ask a kulak. The future is unknowable. The best you can do is play the odds. Based on a lifetime accumulation of knowledge of history and human nature, financial management, tax policy, and that kind of thing. Something I'm asked quite a bit is why we pay such high real estate taxes in Texas. I've been writing five-figure checks for real estate taxes for nearly 20 years. Well, the answer is, for one, we don't have state income tax in Texas. So they're going to get you one way or the other. So instead of paying, say, 10% extra on our income, we pay it in the form of real estate taxes. And depending on which school district you live in, the checks can get pretty big. And it's sad that a retiree might have to pay for a brand new $100 million football stadium in Texas. But to give you an example, I have a rental property worth $200,000. The tax bill on that is about 3% of the value of the home. So $6,000 comes out right off the bat before you start calculating how much cash flow you get from the property. And much of it goes to the school district where the property is located. We pay very high school taxes, which sucks if you don't have kids in school, which I didn't. And I still don't, actually. But yeah, I didn't have a kid for a lot of years. But you still want to own real estate that is located in a decent school district, because I've had several tenants who said they want to live in one of my properties because the schools are decent. Now compare that to a state where a lot of my favorite people live, in Louisiana, right next door to us, to the east. They have a state income tax and we don't. Well, there's this progressive. But if, let's say, you're filing jointly and you make a combined income over $100,000, their tax rate is 4.25%, in addition to a state sales tax of 4.45%. So their total tax bill comes to almost 10%. So the complaint I see most with regard to real estate taxes is that you can never truly own your home. You spend 30 years paying off your mortgage with hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest paid over the life of the loan, and you're still basically renting your house from the government in the form of the tax bill that comes every year. And that's a shame. That's a communist type policy, right? You're basically renting your house from the local government forever, regardless of whether you paid it off. So you've got retired grandparents in Texas who some of them feel like they got to keep working at 78, 80, 82 years old to pay this massive tax bill. And the saddest part about that is your taxes are calculated based on the appreciated value of the home. So you may have bought the house for $50,000, as Ice Cube's parents did in the 1960s. Nowadays, you're looking at massive real estate taxes on an unrealized gain. Which, by the way, you might die in that house, in which case you never realize a gain. But you sure are paying money to the government. And that 80-year-old couple's money, the retirees, the government might be taking their money and sending it to those whose parents weren't even born when they bought the house in the 60s. They might not even be born in America. Maybe they're born 20 years later and their kid joins a Venezuelan gang and walks across the border, only for a newly installed communist government to take their tax dollars and distribute it to the gangbangers so that they can stay in swanky Roosevelt hotels. I don't know about you, but I want to see frog marches. I do believe there's been some treason that's occurred. My wife and I were watching the latest OJ documentary on Netflix the other night, and she was a baby when all that went down. So I was telling her just how unreal it was that the world shut down when the verdict was read. I was in 10th grade, and the teachers brought two television sets into the classroom and put them back to back. And we had those accordion walls between the classes to where you could slide them to the side and make four classrooms into one big giant classroom. So all four classes were gathered around the TV to see if they'd find the juice guilty or not. And like everywhere else in America, when the verdict was read, all the black folks cheered and the white people were like, oh my God, they let him get away with murder. I will say though, as somebody who I've been obsessed with the case and like I've watched all the movies, documentaries, I even read Vincent Bugliosi's book, Mike Gilbert's book. If you're looking for a good read, the Bugliosi book especially is really good, if the case interests you at all. Because what he did was acted as though he's a former prosecutor. He's dead now. He died in 2015. But he outlines how he would have prosecuted the case to ensure a guilty verdict, basically trashing Marsha Clark and Chris Darden. And those were the actual prosecutors. So I felt like I had seen and heard it all, but there was one thing said in this latest series that I probably read in Gilbert's book, but I had forgotten about. I'm sure it's in there. But at least I had never heard it said. And when I heard it, I was like, whoa. So Gilbert was OJ's agent. His book was called How I Helped OJ Get Away with Murder. And he did. He's a POS. Because he knew all along. But as his agent, he was making a shit ton of money helping OJ sign autographs in jail, which of course allowed him to spend tens of millions of dollars on his dream team of attorneys for his defense. Imagine if you or I were on trial for nearly decapitating our ex-wife and her friend. We might be able to afford a decent attorney, but you know, maybe if our parents chipped in, you know, if they believed we didn't do it, they might help. But that murdering SOB hired 11 of the most prominent attorneys in America. It takes a lot of lawyers to convince a racist jury not to convict a guy who, thanks to DNA evidence, did you know this? Based on the DNA evidence, the blood found at the scene and the blood found in his Bronco and the blood found dripping into his house and all that, the odds that it wasn't OJ, have you ever seen those stats? I have them, I'll share. So the blood drops at the crime scene matched OJ Simpson's DNA with a probability of error of 1 in 9.7 billion. The blood found on his sock in the bedroom, in his bedroom, OJ's bedroom, 1 in 7.7 billion chance of error. The blood inside the Bronco matched both Nicole and Ron Goldman with a probability of error of 1 in 21 billion. And other DNA evidence placed the chances of another match, someone other than OJ, was as low as 1 in 57 billion. Now, not only are there only 8 billion people on Earth, there are only 8 billion people. But if you went back to the year 1600, there have only been about 23 billion people born on Earth. But there's a smooth-talking, skinny lawyer that's on all these documentaries, the guy with the bug eyes. He said, not everybody's idea of justice is the same. And boy, was that true. They made that case about race, and he got away with murder. The one good thing about the OJ case, if there was a good thing, was that race relations improved. White guilt went away. That's how they were able to do welfare reform and implement policies like stop and frisk in New York, when people didn't have any concern for being called racist after that. And it stayed that way for maybe, 13 years till Obama came along? And then white guilt made a real strong comeback. And it stuck with us, at least until very recently. So 13 years off, 16 years on, and I'm sure we'll see Dems try to divide us again as soon as they can. Hell, look at Tom Hanks. But going back to Mike Gilbert, the agent, he shared a conversation that he had with OJ after the trial, when OJ was forced to sell his estate, Rockingham, the estate where he lived. They were sitting in the backyard by the pool, and Mike asked him, he said, OJ, what happened that night? And OJ said, man, if she hadn't opened the door with a knife in her hand, she'd still be alive. And as far as I know, that's the only time he's admitted to killing her. And as you know, OJ is dead now. Let's hope he's burning in hell for all eternity. Let's talk about Trump, everybody's favorite topic, and Putin. Because if you're a student of good communication, if you're a business person of any kind, what we are watching is a masterclass in negotiations. And I am here for it, which means you are too. Thanks for being here. We have a president who wrote the book on deal making, and we get to watch him in real time. And even if you don't like him, as I wasn't a big fan of Obama, but if you're smart, you detach yourself emotionally and see what you can learn from the guy. See what you can learn from anybody that you don't necessarily like. In case you missed the president's statement last week, that's what I want to share. So he said that after he talked to Putin, he said he had a lengthy conversation and a highly productive phone call with Putin, that they discussed Ukraine, the Middle East, AI, the power of the dollar, and various other subjects. He said, we both reflected on the great history of our nations and the fact that we fought so successfully together in World War II, remembering that Russia lost tens of millions of people and we likewise lost so many. We each talked about the strengths of our respective nations and the great benefit that we'll have someday in working together. But first, we agreed we want to stop the millions of deaths taking place in the war with Russia and Ukraine. President Putin even used my very strong campaign motto of, quote, common sense, something we both believe very strongly in. We agreed to start negotiations immediately, and we'll begin by calling President Zelensky to inform him of the conversation, something which I'll be doing right now. Millions of people died in a war that wouldn't have happened if I were president. I want to thank President Putin for his time and effort with respect to this call and for the release yesterday of Mark Fogel, a wonderful man that I personally greeted at the White House. I believe this effort will lead to a successful conclusion, hopefully soon. Why is he talking to Putin? Because he wants people to stop dying. Why didn't our last president want the same? I'll tell you why. Because the whole sham of a presidency was a lesson in projection. Trump is obviously empathetic and wise, so they said Biden was. How does Biden not get on the phone with the Russian president? Because he's an evil moron. Sorry, that bothers me a lot. It bothers me a lot because I've met quite a few people. Last year, I met quite a few people who had to flee the war in Ukraine. And when you hear their personal stories, when they tell you what they went through and what their family members went through and that their sister died or their brother was snagged off the street and sent to fight on the front lines, it hits you different. What did Stalin say? One death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic. Well, I heard firsthand the tragedy of Ukrainians losing loved ones. If you want evidence of the simulation, evidence number 15,648, you know what Stalin was referring to? The famine he created in Ukraine. Incredible. Now, this new American administration is going to show us how freaking easy it is to get this thing resolved. Trump said they both expressed a desire for peace, and that they committed to working closely with discussions to start immediately. But if we just focus on Trump's statement for a minute, we both reflected on the history of our great nations. Very smart. When you're negotiating, you want the other side to save face. You don't want to embarrass them or denigrate them. You're trying to get something accomplished, so you appeal to their self-interest. You validate their own opinions of themselves. We watched Putin in the Tucker interview go on for 15 minutes about his love for Russia and its history. And Trump knew that. He knew how much pride they still take in defeating the Nazis in World War II, something our nations achieved together, so he pointed that out. In Russia, they still celebrate what they call Victory Day every year on May 9th. They have big parades and sing songs from the World War II era and eat big meals. It's a big celebration. He talked about this era of common sense, which they're both in favor of, which is so interesting, right? You leave the opposition to oppose common sense. It's hilarious. And he knows that the war wouldn't have happened had Trump been in office for a lot of reasons. One, he's a big proponent of peace through strength, which he has proven. Secondly, the benefit of having a wealthy businessman as president is you have somebody who believes money is earned. Unlike the last guy, he had no financial interest in Ukraine. Hell, they've been building Russia up to be our enemy since I was a teenager. They were an enemy, obviously, under the Soviet Union. But when that collapsed, we continued with NATO and trying to paint them as our sworn enemy. Of course, culminating with our defense of democracy, which we did by overthrowing their democratically elected government in Ukraine. Theater kids projection playing opposite day to this day. I'm anxious to see if they're able to charge anyone with treason for the Russian collusion hoax. I'm sure you've seen where the impeachment was USAID funded. Did Biden pardon that Vindman fella? I don't know. But what I have seen is, I don't know if you saw this, there have been record searches for criminal defense attorney in D.C., in addition to BleachBit and wipe hard drive and erase, that sort of thing. This movie is getting good. Also of note, Trump didn't get on the phone until they released Mark Fogel, which we weren't privy to those negotiations, but I imagine Trump wouldn't get on the phone with Putin before they released The American. Then, of course, it gave him an opportunity to commend Putin for releasing him and the statement and everything. But something else that's wonderful to see is we're getting Americans back from around the world. Did you know we had guys being held in Venezuela? And Grinnell went there and got them out, you know, in 24 hours or something. We got them back. Gaza, Russia, where else? But something I was saying during the last 4 years, as somebody who travels the world, how awful it would have been to be taken hostage during the puppet's reign. Because imagine being at a concert in Israel and getting taken to a tunnel by Palestinian terrorists. With Trump in office, you know he would do whatever it takes to get you home. Under the last guy, that's not so. Maybe that's something we should talk about. But first, so speaking of wealthy businessmen, another form of projection that all the idiots are accusing Musk of is trying to get wealthier by way of Doge. The reason I believe that's projection is because when you're not a good person, it doesn't occur to you that somebody could be doing good for its own sake, just to help others, because they're not that way. They don't get joy from helping others. They don't get those feelings of joy. In fact, their psychological makeup is more Schadenfreude. And what's interesting is when good people encounter those types, they have a hard time fathoming how others could be the way that they are. Schadenfreude is a German term. It's derived from Schaden, which means damage, and Freud, meaning joy. And these are people who get joy or pleasure from seeing others struggle or fail, or really any suffer in any way. The driving force behind it is usually aggression or rivalry and lack of empathy, like for a hostage. But probably especially rivalry. Because if they perceive somebody to be more successful than them, they find comfort in the other guy not doing so well, you know, if he falters, believing that their relative status is improved when they see the other guy knock down a notch. These are generally people who have low self-esteem, obviously. And we know self-esteem, low self-esteem is due to too much self-focus. They're not others directed. And sadly, it's hard to break free from that. And it becomes a never-ending cycle. We see it in our politics of envy, those seeking social justice, those who'd be okay with their political rival being shot in the head. That's why you almost never see good, genuine people seeking social justice, or a pretty girl for that matter. Pocahontas was never cute. Do you think she genuinely cares for others? I'm not doing comedy now, so don't make me laugh. Can you imagine having a president who had a grandchild that he didn't acknowledge? We live that. Leftists advocate for that which makes them feel good about themselves. Consequences be damned. And you can't expect somebody who prefers feeling over thinking to engage in second order thinking, which is consequences. Don't think there's not such a thing as second order feeling. But if they could, they would. But it's not just politics. You see it. I've seen it in my personal life many times. I was told by a guy one time, somebody that I knew deep down was not a good person. I'd gotten to know him and I'd been on the other side of his jealousy and cruelty. And he said to me once, he said, "You think you're this good guy, but you're not." And that comment was so revealing to me. It'd be like somebody calling you a racist, but you know that you're not. And so you immediately think, oh, that's so interesting. Because they're probably projecting. And you'd have to wonder if they're a racist, right? Because you know you're not. Like, where would that come from? But when that guy said that to me, I was like, whoa. Because I knew him well enough to know that he didn't have any desire to serve others, at least not without any expectation of reciprocity. It'd have to be a quid pro quo thing. Because his theory of mind is limited. And that limitation means that he doesn't know that others do good for its own sake, for the sake of doing good. Or since he doesn't experience feelings of joy from serving others, why would he think others do? That's not something he could relate to. So I tend to think sociopathy, like autism, is on a spectrum to where the more extreme you get on the scale, the more likely you are to, I don't know, commit genocide or commit crimes against people. You'd have no qualms committing crimes against humanity because that's more vague, a la Fauci, right? But those people are everywhere. But I said I wasn't going to talk about COVID, so at least till the facts come out. And with regard to theory of mind, something I've come to believe in recent years is that a lot of people just aren't good at cause and effect. And to a common sense sort of thinker, the if-then logic stream thinkers, like they think that that's as basic as thinking gets. But we're not talking about people who have strong logic. They're feelers. It's why they're economically illiterate. Which if you don't understand economics, you can't really know how anything works. And we've seen evidence of this, them not knowing how anything works. I mean, consider all the lawfare. Do you think they thought about if-then? I mean, they might have thought about if-then, but if they did, they were wrong 100% of the time. And not just lawfare generally, but specifically, like when they said Trump inflated the value of Mar-a-Lago. Anyone with any economic sense, and you saw a bunch of business leaders come out and speak against it, because they were like, oh God, we're ruled by idiots who don't know how the world works. I actually think that may be why Trump didn't release his taxes, because those who wanted his taxes released weren't business people. They've worked in government all their life and they would have no clue what they're looking at. I don't think your average awful could decipher my taxes, much less a billionaire's. Or what about the consequences of out of wedlock birth rates by way of the Great Society from the 1960s, or the consequences of gender ideology We're letting down the drawbridge for the third world to enter the castle. If Elon Musk is right, and they did that in hopes of getting us to one-party rule a la California. Well, they didn't, so wrong again. What else? I'd probably do this all day. What happens if you miss by less than an inch, less than a quarter of an inch? You think that's something they thought about? You think they thought if we F around and miss, then we enter the find out phase? Unwanted pregnancy? How often does that happen? If somebody, as we speak, is doing sex in the back of a car, or do you think it's okay to abort the child? This is all macro, micro stuff. You have to elect strong and wise leaders so they'll do what is in the country's long-term best interests. Cut spending, for example. They think through the consequences of their decision. There's some second-order thinking there. You can't expect awfuls and feelers to think things through. They're going to do what they feel in the moment. Elect a fruitcake and you're going to get a rainbow-infused sugar high with disastrous long-term consequences. The old adage of you think strong leaders are scary, wait till you see what weak men are capable of. We live through that. Remember last episode I shared a few beefs on X that I got into and some of the best comebacks I'd ever seen? Add this one to the list I saw last week. For it to be funny, you'd need to know who Harry Sisson is. He's a political type, an influencer of the DNC. He's like all the other white dudes for Harris who, they might have a high IQ, like they're not stupid, but their IQ somehow matches up with their testosterone levels. And like most dim men, their closet door is locked and they can't get out. And you wouldn't even need to tell anybody if you were out, right? You could just tweet it from inside the closet. But I'm sure they've made the calculation. They figure it's a faster rise in politics portraying themselves as one of the few straight guys in the party, which is, I guess, why you can't call them low IQ. I saw David Hogg. He tweeted something about, I'm never having children because he loves his snickerdoodle dog or something, or climate change or something else. Dude, you're never having kids because you like dudes' butts too much. It's obvious. But the comeback I'm talking about, the guy's name is Joey Manarino, and he was married to a gal named Ada Lutch, and they're both prominent. They have prominent accounts on X. I guess they're influencers or something. And for that reason, they had a very public divorce in the last year. So Joey Marino, he posts on Valentine's Day saying that we all know what Harry Sisson is getting for Valentine's Day. And he posted some chocolate D&Bs like you might see at a bachelorette party. And he said, don't eat them all in one sitting. So Harry Sisson replies and says, I'm actually inviting your ex-wife over, the same one who divorced you. So then the wife chimes in. The wife replies and says, sorry, I don't date faggots. Moving along. AI. I said I was going to talk about AI. So the AI tool I've been using most, well, two of them, AI Notebook and Perplexity. I like Perplexity so much that I rarely ever use Google anymore. Perplexity makes Google feel like microfiche. The first time I used it, I turned to the most beautiful woman in the world and I said, life is forever changed. That's right. I have access to the most beautiful woman in the world. Interesting note on that. So if you were introducing your wife to a multitude of people, you might say, this is my lovely wife. Or this is my beautiful wife. But if you're introducing your wife to just one person, you'd never say, this is my beautiful wife. Why is that? Is that something you thought about? I tell you what, if I'm ever lucky to meet you someday, if you run into us at the airport or a conference somewhere, I might just shake your hand and say, nice to meet you. And then turn and say, and this is my gorgeous wife. Because I'm a trendsetter. Not really. But I have a few stories. I'll share a few instances of where I've gotten people saying certain things, albeit inadvertently. When I was in fifth grade, if I liked a kid, sometimes I'd call him Studley. I have no idea how I came to the word. But I've always been one to give people I like nicknames. I don't know why. How do we ever come to start using any word? How is it we just go about our day and suddenly start saying forte? Like using new words as our forte. It's a weird thing. It's probably from reading, if I had to guess. I remember one time in my 20s, I talked about a coup when I meant coup, which means I'd never heard the word spoken. It was something I had read, which is why you should never criticize somebody who pronounces a word incorrectly, because it usually means they've read it and not said it or never heard it said. Like when Obama referred to corpsmen, you remember that? I believe he was talking about Marines, and although you'd expect the commander-in-chief to know better, but, you know, he was a very unique choice for president. Anyway, kids started calling me Studley at school, and I was probably 10. And one day, my dad picks me up from school, and kids were telling me bye, and when I got in the car, my dad kind of gave me the side eye and said, "Your friends call you Studley?" And I said, yes, they do. And I didn't think anything of it at the time, but I guess that would be like me picking up my daughter and her friends were like, "Bye, goddess. See you tomorrow, goddess." Oh, well. The nickname didn't stick, thankfully. Either they got to know me better or they looked up the word. I don't know. But I prefer to be called man anyway. Man has stood the test of time, right? When I was a freshman in high school, I had a buddy in the neighborhood who was a big guy. He looked like my dad. He was a huge offensive lineman on the football team. He had as much hair on his face as he did on his back, you know, that kind of guy. And he liked to imitate me, which, now that I think about it, that's happened quite a few times in my life. But he would say he would imitate my twang monotone. So he would say, "I don't know, man. What are you doing, man? I don't know, man." Something like that. So when I first moved to Houston, I probably shared this before, I had to change the way I spoke because people couldn't understand me. I was a coon ass who talked too fast. My name went from Bradley to Brad, which incidentally, my best buddy's wife still calls me to this day. It's real drawn out. And her name is Sarah, and I call her Sarah. Sarah, it's a Texas thing. And when I was in high school, this same friend, who's Chase Lambin, by the way, if you haven't picked that up, my author friend, I'm sure he likes the sound of that. He has written a book you should buy. It's if you have a young hitter in your life, baseball player, it's called The Hitter's Handbook. If you want a copy, you can hit him up on the internet or let me know. He and I are good enough friends. I can probably put you in touch. But his older brother's best friend was named Shane Drawe, Drawe, real cool guy. And they called him by his last name, Drawl. This was back before Facebook or anything, so I thought his name was Drawl. And then I get a friend request, you know, 20 years later, and I'm like, "Who the hell is Shane Drawe, Drawe? Now you know why they call it a Texas drawl. There's no better example, right, than a guy who goes by Drawl. Actually, I have a trendsetter story in there too, so... When I was in high school, Chase and I would go to Austin for these big themed fraternity parties. Sorry about that. That was my alarm going off. I have an alarm set when I go to the alarm section of my phone. I have one set for like every 5 minutes, not set, but I have set an alarm for that time in the past because I'm always doing blocks of time. That way I'm focused for what I'm doing. And so I was only supposed to go for about 45 minutes and take a break, but I wanted it to vibrate and it made a noise. Anyway. We go to these parties at the Delt House in Austin, and a theme would be like Mekong. Mekong from Vietnam, where the pledges, what they would do is turn the house into something resembling Vietnam from the war. The Mekong Delta is a place I've been, actually. It's kind of near the Cambodian border in western Vietnam. And everybody would wear camo, or they'd have a party called Beach Bash. And that is when I was saved by Cash, his older brother. So one night at this beach bash, they had filled the house with sand for the theme. And I don't remember how I started to get into it with some dude, but I came very close to getting my ass kicked. And it was a guy I recognized because I was a sports fan. And this guy he was a two sports star at UT. He played football and baseball. So I'd seen him on TV. Well, leave it to me. And I truly don't remember why we had beef, but... You know, I'm from the dirty South. It's a war to be a soldier, right? No, really, I fought all the time at that age. And I wasn't about to tuck it and run. And we got in each other's face. And at that age, I'd probably been in more fights than your average gangster dude. And, you know, something I used to say back then was, one of these days I'm really going to get beat up, because I was okay. Like, I had very quick hands. I was reasonably strong, and I could throw a foot when I needed it. But I knew all it would take was one older, more athletic version of me, and then I'd be toast. But at the same time, I was pretty rational even at that age, because I thought it'd probably be good for me to somebody would whip my butt someday, because, you know, I don't know, I'd learn something, I guess, or keep me from feeling invincible, you know, keep my head straight, keep it from inflating. Anyway, Chase's brother intervened and he said, "Scarborough," that was the guy's name. He said, "You realize you're about to whip a high school kid's ass? Is that what you're going to do?" And he was like, "He's in high school?" And Cash said, "Yeah, that's my little brother's best friend." So fortunately for me, cooler heads prevailed, and I lived to fight another day. But it was actually senior year of college. I took it. I had a black eye. I was bleeding from the eye, and I got beat up pretty bad. It was ugly. And it ruined one of my shirts, one of my gamers, too, a good look shirt. And I had a black eye that was still there for picture day a few weeks later. I believe I've told that story somewhere on the blog, not in detail, but. But so get this, a month later, I was in Austin again, and that guy, well, I was staying at a friend's house this time, or a friend's girlfriend's older sister's apartment, who went to UT. And the older sister made a booty call after midnight. Guess who shows up? None other than the dude who was seconds away from burying my head in the sand that night, up to my neck, hopefully, if I was lucky. What are the odds of that? Similar thing happened, and I'll get to what I was going to say here in a minute, trend setting, but something similar happened when I was in sixth grade. I got in a fight with this kid who had a very unique last name, and I had hurt him pretty bad, and he had to be sent home from school and all that, which, now that I think about it, that was a pretty common thing for those who fought me. maybe that's why kids wanted to fight little Bradley, because they wanted to go home. I don't know. But to my credit, I never started the fights. I don't think I've ever started a fight. I didn't even like fighting. But my thing was, like, the reason I didn't like to fight is because it always ruined a good time. Like, you remember in high school when somebody would fight at a party? The party would never continue. Everybody would have to go home. So, yeah, although I didn't start fights, I was very prepared if someone were to try to fight me. Or, you know, well, I take it back. The first fight I got into in Texas, when I was the new kid on campus, that kid stole my money, and I was making selling basketball cards, my little business that I've talked about. I went after that kid. But I'm not even sure that's an exception, because you can't expect to steal somebody's money and then they be like, "Oh, shucks, he's got my stuff now. What can I do?" And that little guy's lucky I hadn't seen American History X yet. You remember that movie, Bite the Curb? Because I was pissed, but I did get my money back. Well worth a few days of in-school suspension. Well, about a month after that, in sixth grade, when I went to the doctor for allergies, they put me on a shot regimen. And for allergy shots, where I had to go in once a week and get a big-ass needle in my arm. And I hadn't had a shot since I got the shot that's required before kindergarten. And for that, I had to be held down. And because as they would try to stick me in the butt cheek with the needle, I kept reaching back and saying, "No!" And I would swipe and break the needle out of the, you know, I didn't want the nurse poking me. I bent quite a few needles. So they had to hold me in place and treat me like a Looney Tune. So I didn't like needles. And what do you know, the nurse who walks in to give me the allergy shots, the name on her name tag was the same name as the kid that I had beat up in school a month earlier. But yeah, crazy odds, but I won't bore you with more stories. It's just crazy to think how many times in my life I've had to think to myself, "Wow, what are the odds of that?" I mean, you'll probably hear some of those stories eventually, but because these today are child's play compared to some of the other stuff that I've been through where it's like, no way that just happened. But trendsetter stories. So at these parties in Austin, there was this handicapped gentleman that was, he was almost like the fraternity's mascot. And every time we'd go up there, he was there at the parties. He was maybe 60 years old, if I had to guess. And he was always drunk, like four sheets to the wind drunk. His name was Gio. Do you know where three sheets to the wind comes from, by the way? Back in the days of sailing ships, the sheet was the rope that controlled the trim of the sail. So when the sheets are loose, the sails start flapping around like a fish out of water, and the ship gets out of control, like a drunken fraternity mascot. And I share that so you can't say I listened to an entire podcast episode and didn't learn anything. So there you go. Entertain, elevate, or educate. I just taught you something, hopefully. Anyway, we'd asked this guy, this older fella who was blowing bubbles in the corner, if he liked a girl at the party. Like, we'd part had a point at a girl and say, "Is she hot? You like her?" And he would say, "She my but she want to," which we thought was the funniest thing in the world. So another cool thing about this fraternity house, they had all the classes of prior years hanging on the walls. It'd be like 100 dudes in little oval circles. Everybody's wearing a tie with a white shirt with their name underneath. And in one of those photos, I think it was 1989, there was a guy who once said that what he loved about high school girls, man, was I get older and they stay the same age. You ever hear the story of how Matthew McConaughey was discovered in Austin? He was studying film at UT, and one night he went out to a bar. It was the Hyatt Hotel in Austin, that bar. I think they knew somebody. They had a friend that was bartending. And he went with his girlfriend, and the bartender told him, his buddy told him, that there was a guy over there that's a film director. So McConaughey walks over and introduces himself, and they got to know each other and liked each other. So the film director invited McConaughey to his office, and it was decided that he was too handsome to be cast for Dazed and Confused, the movie that the line I just recited is from, about high school girls staying the same age. So McConaughey, in an attempt to get uglier, grew out his hair and grew a mustache, and he got the part. Guess who has a mustache today and has his hair grown out? Your humble host. Now you know why. Too handsome. Too handsome. So back to this Geo fella. We naturally loved what he said, and we took it back to Cy Falls, which is where I went to high school. And the game was no longer would you. It was more like, would you let her? I know Apple Podcasts is labeled, I think this podcast is labeled clean. Maybe that'll change after today. I don't know. But here's the wild part. So when I was about 24, I was helping my buddy, former guest Kurt Kristenick, coach the Cy Falls baseball team. That he was an excellent guest. If you're looking for a good listen, it was called Every Day I'm Raking. So anyway, we're coaching this team, and I hear a kid in the dugout say, "She could eat my butt she wants to," or she something like that. Like, "She could eat my butt if she want to." And I couldn't believe my ears. And I said, "Hey, where'd you hear that? What did you just say?" And he laughed. And I said, "No, I need to know what you just said." And he said it again. And I said, "Where did you get that from?" And he got real shy because, you know, when you're 16, your coach who's 24 is like a grown man. You know, I'm hearing yes, sir, no, sir for the first time in my life. By the way, as someone who liked to date young girls as a bachelor in my 30s, the best rejection that saves you a lot of time is when you ask a question and she says, "Yes, sir." She's not trying to be submissive. No, she is saying, "Don't even try, old man." So just a warning for you young kings out there. So, of course, I've taught my daughter to say, "Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am." "Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am." And "Yes, sir, no, sir." With one caveat, she'll be saying it to every man until she is 30. Don't make me throw a foot at your face, young dipshit. Where was I? Oh, the kid in the dugout. So he says, "I don't know, coach. It's just something funny we say. It really doesn't mean anything." And so I shared with him its origins, and suddenly I was the coolest coach since Tommy Lasorda. But it's amazing how words and phrases can trickle down through the years. And I'm not proud to share this story, of course, but I don't care. Maybe you'll find it entertaining. Tell you what, since we're embarrassing ourselves, here's another one. We were sitting on the back of a truck one night, sipping Natty Light Tall Boys, and one of us, could have been me, said, "We need to think of a name for that space between your BH and your boys." Remember, this is pre-internet in the 90s, and the perineum wasn't something they taught in anatomy class. They probably still don't, right? So I suggested we call it your spectutor nozzle. And what do you know? It became widely adopted in the halls of my high school, as John Mayer would say, who he didn't become popular till I graduated. But same thing. I was somewhere in my 20s in Houston, and some of the young guys who were never in high school with me at the same time, I didn't know them. They used the word spectutor nozzle. And I was like, huh, no way. But And it's not, I say it's not something to be proud of because, you know, there was some other rowdy teenager with a butt cut somewhere in America who came up with Taint. And that's probably way better. Of course it's better, right? It caught on much more than Spectuder nozzle. And it stuck. Everybody knows what a Taint is. Or at least what a Taint. But yeah, when I came up with Spectuder nozzle, Taint hadn't yet entered the zeitgeist. So remember that if you're taking notes for all you aspiring Jeopardy contestants. Taint wasn't a word until turn of the century, late 90s, early 2000s. And speaking of Jeopardy, that's a show that'll make you grateful for advances in technology because I save it to the library in YouTube TV and get to watch it commercial free whenever I want, which is wonderful. I remember how you used to watch Jeopardy and you couldn't get anything right because you missed Alex telling you what the categories were for the round. Well, now you can rewind it and fast forward and pause and shake it and washy trick it. And something I realize now that I'm a father of a four-year-old, without the ability to pause and rewind TV, you miss just about everything that's said, to the point that you might as well not even have the TV on. I bet Pawpaw wishes he had the rewind button on his BMW with antlers, right? And it's black and white BMW, not to be confused with BBW, N-E-W, or A-W. Let's talk about Lil Wayne for a second. How are they going to have Kendrick Lamar do the halftime show at the Super Bowl when the GOAT lives down the street in Holly Grove, or is from Holly Grove, still lives in the area? Lil Wayne has said, if I had one guess, then I guess I'm just New Orleans. Ridiculous that they would bring Kendrick Lamar in, who most people didn't like the halftime show. I thought it was crap. I didn't even watch it, actually. I've seen clips of it. I went outside to share a cigar with one of my top G's, but I don't dislike Kendrick Lamar. It's just that, well, I know what it is. I have the best memory of last year's halftime show when it was Ursha Baby. And the girls I share a last name with were acting like backup dancers and blocking the TV, but I didn't mind. And I don't mind They Not Like Us, that song, the Kendrick song. In fact, one of his songs is at the top of my newly created Spotify list, the one with SZA. I don't know if I'm saying that right. S-Z-A. I think he's done a few with her, but the one I like is called Luther. It has a beautiful melody and some of the lyrics are excellent. He says, if this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God, introduce them to that light. So by all means, I like that tune. Give me an IV of some Luther when I'm chilling, chillaxing. Kids still say that? Probably not. You're showing your age, man. But seriously, I don't mind hearing Kendrick when I'm on the back porch with a Woodford Reserve in one hand and a Cuban in the other, but not at the halftime show. This year, it should have been Wheezy F Baby. Note to you young fellas, I don't advocate for drinking or smoking. But if you escaped what I escaped, you'd be on the back porch, you know, getting whatever. You get the idea. Know, too, that when I was your age, I didn't drink at all. I went 10 years without a drop of alcohol. But all things in moderation, even moderation. I've heard a lot of people have quit drinking with the simple phrase that alcohol is poison. Kind of like a brain heuristic to make you not want to do it. And I've heard a lot of people have stopped with that idea that alcohol is poison. Did you see the 60 minutes of propaganda that was with the Kamala Harris interview unedited? So for those of you not following along, Trump sued CBS for $10 billion, saying that by heavily editing that interview, that they were guilty of election interference. And so they released the transcript and the unedited version of the transcript. And you see what Trump did? Again, this is negotiating, but he decided to double his ask. He's now suing for $20 billion instead of 10. I feel bad for those who don't appreciate his humor. You know, Orange Man Bad and all that. Because similar to laughing at your own jokes, if you find Trump hilarious, which I do, it'd make for a more joyful time in your life. It's said that we don't deserve him, but if you find him funny, or if you don't find him funny, I would say that sucks for you. Another thought on that. So in Kamala's defense, I don't know if I'm saying her name right. I guess I'm racist if I'm not saying it right, but I think that's how that works. But in Kamala's defense, I wouldn't settle the lawsuit if I were CBS or its parent company, Paramount, because interviews are edited all the time. And they do that to make for a better product, to make it watchable. You wouldn't interview some DEI hire whose Achilles heel is talking in public and put it on your network if you didn't have to, unedited. No, you'd touch it up. You'd make her sound as smart as you could, smart as possible, because we all benefit from that, right? Except her opponent, her political opponent. I don't know if I've shared this inside baseball with you, but when I have guests on the pod, we have taken out as many as 175 ums and uhs in a 190-minute conversation because nobody wants to hear it. It's distracting. And you best believe if I had somebody on that said, AI, okay, is two words, and it means artificial intelligence, okay, in terms of the context in which, let me be clear, I believe in the promise of America and its ideals, the hopes and dreams of the American people, and the aspirations of our country. Let me tell you something. I was raised in the middle class. So let me be clear. My values haven't changed in terms of, if you look at the context in which the promise of what America can be, unburdened by what has been, because I travel all around the country. And I listen in terms of, I'll stop. But if I had a guest who did that, I would tell my editor, this bitch is real dumb. Please do what you can to make sure she doesn't sound dumb. So she could at least make her sound like somebody who is at least on the short list for a managerial role at the McDonald's where she claims to have worked. It's hard for me to let that one go because I worked at Burger King. You want to hear a Burger King story? There was a girl I worked with. Her name is Tabitha. And Tabitha was very pregnant, so much so that the controls for her drive-through headset would sit atop her belly. And I don't know how much money she made, but I imagine she made roughly what I made, which is $4.20 an hour. Well, the item that was most purchased coming through the drive-through was a number one combo, Whopper combo. It came with a medium fry, medium drink. This is back when Whoppers were 99 cents. So we get Mexicans coming through the drive-through from a construction site at lunchtime, and they would order 17 Whoppers con queso. And other days it might be 15 Whoppers, two with cheese, eight no onions, whatever, because you get your way right away, right? So on the Whoppers with cheese, you'd get two slices of thin cheese that were 40 cents. So a Whopper with cheese would be $1.39 plus tax if you're scoring at home. Or if you're sitting there by yourself listening to this, whatever. But I say all that to say, for the most common order, a number one combo is $3.99 or was $3.99 plus tax, and so it'd come to $4.28. Well, this is back before everything was digitized, so Tabitha would take the customer's order, which everybody in Burger King that works there is wearing a headset so you could hear the order from the drive-thru. So she wouldn't have to relay the order to the back, you know, to the guys making the Whoppers. He would hear it firsthand on his headset. But the manager wouldn't wear a headset, no. Maria Gonzalez, her actual name, she acted like wearing a headset was beneath her because she had started from the bottom and was now wearing a headset. Now she was here. Earned a prestigious role in Burger King management. So Tabitha knew 428 was coming, and what she would do is ask the customer when they pulled up to the window if they wanted a receipt. And if they said no, which they did more times than not, she would take the 428 and just put it in her pocket. And if she did that twice an hour, the way she looked at it, she was tripling her hourly wage. And that's stealing, right? She could have gotten a lot of trouble, but I didn't tell on her. And back then, you know, a couple of kids worked at Sonic, and that was the highfalutin high school job because it meant that you got to work all day Saturday with a cute girl or two on skates. And, you know, skates sculpt a gal, I guess. And there were no honeys at Burger King working. But these Sonic skaters, they would make quite a bit in tips. And remember back in the day when Sonic employees were attractive and would skate around the parking lot? I don't know where that went. I guess they all went to work at restaurants like Twin Peaks or Hooters, one of those places, which from what I understand, those servers aren't attractive anymore either. That's one of the most eye-opening things about traveling Central and Eastern Europe. You go to your average restaurant, nothing fancy, and you'll have an attractive server. And I'm thinking, in my country, you would be making $250,000 a year as a drug rep or something. But in Europe, they are waiting tables. or doing the most menial jobs. I saw this little cutie one time in Romania washing windows in the subway. Can you imagine seeing that in New York City? Another good job in high school, I had a guy who sat next to me junior year and in English class, and he worked at the fancy car wash in town where they would wash the car for you. And he told me one day that on Saturdays, he could make as much as $50 in extra money in tips. And I said, wow, man, how do you do that? How do you make so much money? And he said, oh, I have to work a 12-hour shift, but it adds up quick when you take like a quarter or two every half hour from a vehicle. And I was like, oh, that's stealing. And he said, yeah, nobody notices, you know, 50 cents gone from their pile of change. You got to be a little strategic and not take from every car. And I was like, oh, I don't like that. So you know what I did? I'd get my car washed there about once a month. And one time I counted my quarters before I went through, and he wasn't working that day. And when my car came out, sure enough, I had 75 cents missing. So I went to the manager all pissed off, and I said, you know, not only am I not paying for my car wash today, but you know how you guys do that hole punch where you get like five washes and get a free one? You know, I want a few of those punch cards. So I figured small price to pay for him to gain some insight into the theft ring that his teenage employees were running there. But Big Joe, I talked about the guy from the neighborhood. I've had lunch with him. This was probably 5 years ago. We're overdue, buddy, if you're listening. Yeah, I think he's a pastor now. It's always good to have a pastor friend, right? It's always good to have a friend in every industry, whether it's a car mechanic or an attorney or a doctor or whatever. He and I would go to Blockbuster Music back in the day and sample the tunes. Remember when you could do that? And then you drop $17.95 on a CD so you could listen to one or two songs. Yeah, back when all your money either went to fast food or CDs. High school. Now you can subscribe to Spotify and listen to anything you want at any time for pennies, which of course we take for granted, just like most advances in technology. And that explains why elevated standards of living don't make people happier, because although you might live better than a Rockefeller 100 years ago, we'd rather be rich relative to those around us. We want to be wealthy amongst the living. You know, Tim Urban, he wrote a book I just finished called What's Our Problem? I think it's his second book. But he's the Wait But Why guy. That's the name of his blog. And he posted on X last week. He said, I still can't believe I can. And then he's got a list of bullet points. He says, I still can't believe I can look at the world map and tap anywhere to zoom in at street level. I can instantly access any song, book, movie, TV show, or podcast ever made. I still can't believe I can have any conceivable question and get an immediate answer or video explanation. Take a video or photo wherever I am and add it to my massive, searchable, always accessible personal archive. Video call anyone in my life at any time, no matter where they are. Watch live sports on a little wireless glass rectangle in my hand. Type out these thoughts and have them read by thousands of people all over the world a few seconds later. I had a buddy tell me one time that he had quit looking at pornography, which is admirable. And I told him, that's admirable, man. I'm proud of you. And I said, what was the final straw? What made you quit? And he said, I think about my grandfather, who was deceased by this time. And he said, I don't know if he's looking down at me, but regardless, I know he wasn't wasting his life looking at internet porn. And I said, that's true. But do you think he'd have been looking at porn if it were available to him? And we laughed. But I do think eliminating porn from your life is one of the best things you could do to improve your life. I've been to parts of the world where it's banned, and in certain countries like Indonesia. And I think you can tell a difference in the men and boys there. I also perceive their intergender dynamics to be better. And I would attribute it to that. I don't know. I can't be sure, but it makes sense. Couple more things I got people saying that I'm probably not proud of, but I'll see how much I can embarrass myself today. It's cathartic to share your secrets. I don't know if you know that. There's a reason Catholics go to confession, or you'd be hard to find an awful who doesn't go to therapy, for example, because if they're honest, it helps. And I don't mean honest about therapy being helpful. I mean honest with a therapist, which I know many people are not. I said I was going to talk about my car buying experience. I'll have to save that for next time. My my badass outro music is going to start soon. Let's do a Gerwinder before we wrap. And of course, I'll do Kids Say the Darndest Things. So Gerwinder, region beta paradox. Often we fail to improve our lives simply because things don't get bad enough. If your new job is hell, you'll leave. But if it's just unsatisfying, you're likely to grind it out. Thus, small problems often threaten our quality of life more than big ones. Boy, do I agree with this one. So I've always been more motivated by positivity than negativity. So as an example, you probably heard when you're managing a team of men or women, or men and women, you'd be wise to inspire women with praise, whereas it's usually better to challenge men. It's just our nature. Women tend to respond better to praise and men challenge. It's why you'd never tell your wife, babe, that booty's real fat. Like, what are you doing? No, you'd call attention to that sculpted backside of hers and tell her to keep it up. But a dude, you might tear him down and then build him up. Tell him he ain't worth it. Ain't worth a shit. And then shave his head and give him a dog tag and yell at him constantly. But I actually don't respond well to challenge if it's overt. So yeah, when somebody's deliberately, I don't know, not like if somebody said when I was young, if a coach told me you suck or tried to diminish me in any way, I would think, well, what makes you better than me? Like you might just be older than me, which we don't have any control over. Right? You were born before me. And if you're so good at what you do, how have you not figured out that you approaching me this way isn't going to work? So I guess maybe I'm a girly mom in this way, in that if I receive a sincere compliment or especially appreciation, men tend to like appreciation too, right? You know, I might walk 1,000 miles for you. But the negative that does light a fire for me is disgust. So at different times in my life, I've been a shredded up, muscle bound freak. Not anymore, but there was this one time that I saw a picture of myself with my shirt off, and I was so disgusted, I vowed never to look like that again. So that would be reason number 4,578 to become a student of your own life, to get to know yourself well, so you'll know what motivates you and what doesn't. And you can communicate that to those who are in a position to positively impact your life, whether it's your wife, your buddies, your boss, you know, whoever. And if you're in a leadership position, it's incumbent on you to figure out how to get buy-in from each individual member of your team. You've got to manage them individually because everybody's different. Because if you get it wrong, you might not only not get the best from your team members, but they might lose some of their respect for you for not caring more to figure them out, right? So your team won't care how much you know until they know how much you care, that sort of thing. All right, let's do Kids Say the Darndest Things. So when I wake up in the morning, what I do is go downstairs. I'm usually up before my girls, and I'll turn the coffee pot on to, you know, coffee pot, make your head hot, that kind of thing. And I'll do my morning thing. And then when they come downstairs, I go and give them a kiss. Well, the first thing my wife does when she wakes up is she brushes her teeth. Well, not me. I don't brush my teeth until after that first cup of coffee. And then when I go upstairs to wash my body, to take a shower, I will brush my teeth then. So after my daughter gives me a kiss, she wants a kiss from mommy. And my wife has the best lips that could ever be kissed. You'll never know, but I benefit there. So anyway, right afterward, my little girl will still have her eyes closed, and then she opens them. And the other day she looks at me and says, "Daddy, your kisses are sticky and all crumbed up." That's all I got for today. If I can do anything for you, let me know. Or if I can make your listening experience more enjoyable, let me know. And if you're thinking, yeah, I'd like you to have guests again, well, that'll be coming soon enough. I had another setback. I'm still battling a health issue. Had another procedure done Thursday last week. So I'm actually doing as much as I can right now, which happens to be this. So I hope you enjoy it. I certainly do. I'll get past it. Thank you for your prayers. They are much needed and appreciated. God bless you. Thank y'all for listening.